The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
If the opposition can't smell blood this year, we're as well pack it in, because even if Comerford's kickouts are as good as Cluxton's, every team is taking a step forward.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The News Round on Off the Ball
with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
This is News Talk.
All right, it's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock. Is it coming home? God, we'll be sick of that by Sunday night. We're going to be talking a lot, though, about the Euro 2020 final over the next 3 hours. John Giles will be giving his thoughts. Maybe he can make the comparison of this England team to the World Cup winners of 1966. That is the level we're talking about with this England team right now. We'll also have David Myler for his thoughts ahead of the final, and James Richardson as well, a man with a foot in both camps in some ways. That's coming up on the football show. Brian O'Driscoll will be with us after 8 o'clock to give his thoughts on the latest developments on the Lions in South Africa. They are now going to play a game on Saturday. They're going to play the Sharks again. And it seems as though maybe the COVID situation in the Lions camp isn't as severe as we thought this time yesterday. So Brian O'Driscoll with some strong thoughts on that coming your way after 8 o'clock. We'll check in on the tennis at Wimbledon as well. 53106 is the text number. Add off the ball if you want to get in touch on Twitter. Will O'Callaghan is with us. Evening, Will.
Evening, Nathan. How are you getting on?
And Johnny Ward in his England jersey. Good man, Johnny.
What's the crack?
Are you keeping well?
Grand, yeah, grand. I think it could be coming home, Nathan.
It should be coming home at this stage. They'll go in as favourites for the final. You know, we have spoken about this for a full-on month, haven't we, at this stage, as to how we feel about England possibly doing, which I guess underlines the fact that they went into this tournament as favourites with one of the strongest squads, and they have delivered for once on all their promise. But I won't lie, watching the match last night as it's ticking down in normal time and extra time, firstly, I'm properly tense. Like, there's nothing quite like the tension of tournament football, regardless of whether your team's involved. If it's close in those latter stages, you just want a goal. And by God, did I want Denmark to score it. And then, for them to get the winner in that way, is it cheating, Johnny? Did they cheat their way to victory?
No, I don't think they did. You know, and in fairness, because of Ireland's poor sort of record of getting to tournaments and then our poor record of getting there, you know, we generally have a default position then. We kind of cheer on whoever England are playing, and that's our interest for the tournament. And I think, well, that's the way it's been in my family anyway since I was a kid. And it's kind of the same. You know, maybe I like Gareth Southgate. This is not a dislikable English team really at all. They're young players. They seem to be fairly humble. But then they boo the Danish national anthem and you're like, well, yeah, that's kind of one of the reasons I don't really like England. But I think, to be fair, the Sterling situation, I thought it was a borderline decision, but I thought Didi Hamann RT was way over the top on it. Like, I thought none of the video replays really proved one way or the other. I think there was a bit of contact. In general, I think Sterling's a fairly honest player, and he went down, but like, so what? He was kind of, two players converged on him. It wasn't like he fell over. And I thought it was a borderline one. I thought there were too much hysterics about it afterwards, but ultimately they were the better team.
Is diving cheating?
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
I think
really
it is, yeah.
Premeditated, it's just something that happens.
Well, yeah. He didn't dive, though. He there's a difference in getting contact and maybe going down, but diving is different. Like, diving is effectively making a meal of something that never happened.
I saw Kevin Doyle, Will, making the point, and he was showing the replay, probably the best angle, where it does look as though there is the slightest contact. Now, all the responses are, he's already gone down before the first contact, and then there's a second little nudge. But if you're a player of the talent of Raheem Sterling and the speed that he does everything, maybe all it takes is the slightest contact.
Well, look, he's slaloming at a bit of pace and changing direction when he gets into the box. And I think the foul isn't on the touchline side. The foul is probably the contact that comes across where he gets kind of hip-checked, but not all, with too much force from the left-hand side as he goes to try and switch his feet again. Like, it's not the most egregious decision of all time. It's one of those that you're appealing massively for a penalty if it's your player who's gone down in the box. You're extremely disappointed if it's your team who the penalty's been given against. Like, it's a soft one in the grand scheme of things. But, like, when you looked at the VAR, and I thought when they showed the second angle on it, like, it was very hard to overrule the referee's decision if the referee felt that there was contact on Sterling's left leg. Like, he wasn't diving in the way, and I would use the word diving for Harry Kane quite a few times during the game last night. Like, Harry Kane hit the deck multiple times. Sterling, I don't think, was going down before he got the contact, but it is one you'd have to classify as a soft penalty.
The VAR has worked a lot better as well, in that in the Premier League, what we've generally seen, Johnny, is they go out of their way to overturn a decision. They slow it down, like the way we saw Raheem Sterling, and almost force the referee to change his mind. Whereas the referee saw it in real time and actually may have looked at it completely differently, and not in the right way, not in a positive way, if it's suddenly on a screen in front of him slowed down the way we have. Like, he saw it in real time. If there's any contact, he's aware of the impact it has on Raheem Sterling, and maybe the right thing is actually to just let the decision stand.
How many replays did we actually watch of that in full speed? You know, everything you watch is they slow it down, and that's supposed to be the determining factor as to whether something happened. Nothing happened in slow motion. Nothing ever happens in slow motion. And it gives you a completely, to my mind, often a very warped actual view of what happened. And in this instant, I completely agree with you. I think the referee was happy in his original decision. And to be fair, VAR has been redeemed a little bit in this tournament, or a lot, really. I think it's a joke in the Premier League. It takes so much of the joy out of goals and all that, but it's also just the minuscule kind of decisions and offsides and all that. But, and the referee, as you say, VAR in this tournament probably has done more good than bad, I would say, even though I'll never be a fan of it. But I agree, Nathan. I think the referee was happy with his decision. We get on with it, fair enough. And England deserved to win the game. Let's not hide away from that.
The Danish substitutions probably had the biggest impact on the game. I know they were tiring and they had obviously a far longer trip than the English had, but it just took any momentum whatsoever. The freshness that was brought on with Poulsen had no impact. In fact, he was probably the worst player on the pitch. And David Myler coming up was making that point, actually. In games of this intensity, it's been noticeable in quite a few of the knockout matches that it's very hard to bring a player on to actually make an impact.
Well, when Dolberg went off, lads, it was game over for Denmark, because they had no out ball at that point. Like, Johnny and I were watching the game in studio last night. The one thing you would say for Denmark in the second half was at least they were compact and they had two players up front who, when the ball was released into the channel, they'd half a chance. It's just that Walker and Shaw played so well that they were actually cut out on many different occasions. Like, in extra time, I know you guys felt, it seemed to me once those subs were made and Poulsen had no impact whatsoever, that Denmark were just sitting back, almost waiting for penalties to happen at that stage. They never actually looked like scoring once we got into extra time.
It's a difficult one as well, though, Will, because, like, penalties, they're not quite 50-50. And in fairness, Denmark would nearly be favourites with penalties because Kasper Schmeichel is so good. So maybe they made the practical decision that the best way of us winning this game is essentially to get to penalties, and maybe they paid the price for that. But, like, I think you can't underestimate how hard it is for a team that's clearly inferior. The effort that they put in over the tournament and the effort that they put in that England game is really, really hard. I mean, the mental concentration of the two defenders, even for the penalty on Sterling, where you have a player like that who's so quick and such a low central gravity, and to be doing that for 120 minutes, it's really, really tough. And I think, like, you could see at the end when England must have had the ball for 2 minutes, and when Denmark did get it back, they were absolutely shot.
What's the worst thing that's going to happen next Monday? What's going to be the most difficult thing for us to watch from afar if England win?
It'll definitely involve Declan Rice anyway. Me and Will were talking about this last night. It's very, very hard. And you can say, at the time I defended him, the time I said it's far more valuable as a commodity to play for England. We're not very good. England are very good. He's every right to make the decision. But the more you watch him play, the more you watch him sing the national anthem, the more you watch him gee up the English crowds, the same crowd that booed the Danish national anthem, it's hard.
Yeah, I'm with you. I didn't have any great issue with him deciding, you know what, I've decided to go to England. You know, he was a young guy when he came over to Ireland. But it's like, okay, just calm it down a little bit, Declan. You don't need to be the number one Mr. England here. The kiss and the badge, Jesus, come on, please.
I've way more issue with him now than I did at the time when the decision was made. Purely because he gave this timeline just before this tournament started, and he was trying to come across as big an England fan as he possibly could, and he had to try and explain away being part of the Irish camp. And when he explained that in June of 2018, he had gone, I think it was to Dubai to watch the World Cup with his mates, said he was singing God Save the Queen, and he had decided at that point he wanted to play for England. He played for Ireland. He's spoken off the ball on the first week of June when we played the USA in a friendly, when he got capped for the third time by Martin O'Neill, and he said his focus was entirely on the Republic of Ireland. At a time, he goes off then to watch England at the World Cup. Then he strung out his declaration to go for England into about September or October. Like, if he's taken a cap from us and the next week he's gone on holidays to support England at the World Cup,
Well, listen, you go on holidays, you have a few drinks, and next thing you're singing God Save the Queen. Who hasn't it happened to, Will? Who hasn't it happened to?
Not a guy who kissed the badge with the Ireland under-21s just a few months before that, too. Like, whatever about Grealish, at least Grealish was upfront about all this. Like, he never came across and collected the award that he was due to be given.
Did Grealish not come across and collect the award? Is there not a picture of Jack Grealish standing there with the award?
That was his under-19 one.
Right.
I don't think Rice ever collected his one either.
No, he didn't. Proudly voted for Declan Rice as our under-21 player of the year.
Yeah. Were you on that committee that voted for him?
Certainly was, yeah. Don't bring that up again. I get angry messages from Kilbane still about it. Anyways, the news round brought to you by Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. There is a lot going on as well, Will, particularly around the Lions.
Yeah, and the Lions player who tested positive for COVID-19 yesterday has now returned a negative result today. It was a weak positive which was returned yesterday. So if that player were to produce another negative test in the round of PCR testing tomorrow, he will then be released from isolation, and the four players have been deemed close contacts and will be able to play against the Sharks in Pretoria on that game on Saturday afternoon. The two members of the management team, though, who tested positive yesterday have tested positive again today. So they will remain in isolation until they return a negative, along with four close contacts, which includes two players. The Sharks were drafted in, as you mentioned, top of the show, as late replacement for the Bulls, who've been hit with a COVID-19 outbreak of their own, while South Africa against Georgia off tomorrow night because of positive cases in both camps. Last night, Tommy Bowe suggested here on Off the Ball that the test games should be moved to the UK, but the Lions managing director Ben Cavalli, who's been speaking in the last hour or so, insists they're not considering moving that tour away from South Africa.
Right, this is a challenge. I'm definitely not going to sit here and say that this is easy, but we are absolutely determined to make it work, and we've put measures in place to make it work. So we're living in a very strict biosecure environment where we're governed by very strict protocols. We have a medical advisory group in place that has independent virologists and infectious disease specialists that advise us on what we can and can't do. This is the same for the Lions and the Springbok camp. We're tested frequently, minimum three times a week. We have no interactions with the general public. We're playing in far fewer venues than would originally have been the case. And of course, we don't have fans in the venue. So we're doing everything we possibly can to make sure that this tour will go ahead, and we are determined to make it a success.
Well, look, I don't think it's right to revisit any decisions. The choice was made back in March that we would go ahead here in South Africa, and we're focused now on doing the right thing by the tour, working as hard as we possibly can to make sure we deliver for the players, for the fans, and for everybody here in South Africa. And all the feedback we get through the South African media in particular is that the country is desperate for this tour to be completed here. We know that sport in difficult times can provide a much needed distraction from the challenges that people face, and we hope we're providing something positive for people to enjoy.
Yeah, so that's in the last hour. So the game goes ahead on Saturday. It'll be live here on Off the Ball. We'll have all the matches, full commentary, wherever, whenever they happen. Neve Briggs will be with Neil Tracy from 5 o'clock on Saturday. Brian O'Driscoll coming up after 8 o'clock. Really interesting thoughts from Brian on whether this tour should continue, whether it should move back to the UK. And also interest from Brian on the stress and the strain that this is putting on the players, Johnny, who are thousands of miles away from home, who aren't enjoying the Lions experience that they grew up watching and dreaming about, and are sort of stuck there now and got to put up with whatever goes.
Yeah, like I haven't been following the Lions that much apart from obviously the COVID situation, but like if you want to look at it in terms of the Irish clubs who are playing in Europe today, Glentoran have had a break of COVID, Dundalk have had it, the team they're playing from Wales, Newtown have had a COVID outbreak, Sligo Rovers have COVID absentees, and I think it's definitely a reminder to people who probably, like, I think we've all let our shackles off, and, you know, I got my first vaccine today, but essentially it's out there, and there's a strong possibility that if you're not vaccinated, you may run into somebody who has COVID, because the cases are going to rise, and when you see it in a football level, it is becoming quite rampant, and it's sad to see the Lions situation, that there's so much doubt as well over it. Like, I'm sure it's pretty difficult for the players over there.
Warren Gatland's been talking as well, Will.
He has. The Lions head coach says he's confident that whatever happens with the warm-up games, that those three test matches with the box will go ahead as planned.
Vigilant in terms of what we've been doing as a group. I said we've been in this bubble for the last 4 weeks, and so we're not sure where it's come from. It's I think the challenging thing was when we first came into the hotel, where there was a number of the hotel staff that had tested positive and had to be removed. And so whether it's come from that or not, but I know all our tests had been negative up until today. So we'll just address it as it goes. I mean, we knew that there were going to be certain challenges, and we are hopeful that we can get things back on track and this test series can go ahead.
So not just the Lions in action on Saturday evening, Ireland playing as well.
Yeah, and head coach Andy Farrell says it was a balancing act trying to decide how many uncapped players to give a chance to this weekend, while also trying to pick a team to beat the USA at the Aviva Stadium. Debutants from Ulster, Tom O'Toole, Nick Timoney, Robert Balakoon and James Hume all start against the Eagles on Saturday night. Finian Witcherly, Paul Boyle, Quaylen Blade and Harry Byrne are also in line to win their first caps from the bench. And Farrell admits it was a bit of a mix and match selection.
Yeah, it is a balancing act because this is a team game, isn't it? You know, it's just about the team, and the individuals within the team are sort of super important, but it's about performance, and it's about the individuals making sure that they can put the best foot forward for the team, you know, and deliver what's been asked of them. So getting that balance right is key for any selection week. You know, it's lovely as a coach to be able to give people the first caps, but it's also great to grow the experience of the group as well. There's quite a few lads there that get the first start, etc. And you know, Joey gets to go out there and control the game again from 10, and James gets to captain the side again, which is great for his experience down the track as well.
And as Ireland face the USA in the second of the two home summer test matches this Saturday, we're giving you the chance to be there to savour the action. With thanks to Guinness, we have a pair of tickets to give away. So to be given a chance of winning, simply answer this question. Who did Ireland famously beat in November 2016 at Soldier Field in Chicago? Text your name and answer to 53106 to be entered in the draw to win. It's all in association with Guinness. Hashtag Guinness time. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie. And if you're not lucky enough to win, don't worry, as we'll be live from the Guinness storehouse this Saturday across OTB social channels, where we'll be bringing you pre- and post-match analysis of Ireland against the USA. 53106 is the text number. On England against Denmark, there were a few little bits of controversy around the winning goal. So there was two balls on the pitch. Turns out the rules on that mean if the ball isn't interfering with play, the referee doesn't have to pull it. There was the dive. And then there was also a laser in Kasper Schmeichel's eye.
Yeah. UEFA taking disciplinary action, lads, against England after that laser was in the eyes of the Denmark goalkeeper, Kasper Schmeichel. It happened just before he saved Harry Kane's extra time penalty, but Kane did score from the rebound to send England through to the final against Italy next week, and so Sunday night even. Fans also, as Johnny mentioned, booed the Danish national anthem before the game. And former England captain Gary Neville has been given his view on that penalty. He feels it never should have been awarded.
I genuinely think last night that team would have succeeded without that penalty. I think it would have done something different and got that goal. I know that people might say, well, that's a ridiculous thing to say, but I genuinely think they were okay in that game. I said at the end of full time, I think we're okay here because we're playing well. The last 15 minutes of full time, we played well. When Dolberg and Damsgaard went off for them, the game changed completely and they lost their legs. They lost the counter-attack. I thought Declan Rice and Phillips in midfield, along with Shaw and Walker, really stopped the counter-attacks, and we were absolutely brilliant at sustaining our attacks from probably about 70 minutes on. And at that point, I thought we had the game in our hands. And for me, I think the goal would have come. It was never a penalty in my book. I think it was really soft, but the referees have been consistent in this tournament. They've been very, very, I suppose, in some ways, reluctant to overturn these types of decisions. Doesn't make it right or wrong. I think the officiating has been absolutely outstanding. But if we were on the other end of it, we'd be absolutely gutted. So, no, not for me, but I'm glad that we got it.
Well, it's easy to say in hindsight, isn't it, Gary? It's easy to be magnanimous in victory. Real shame for Kasper Schmeichel as well, Johnny, because, geez, he was bloody brilliant all through the tournament.
And particularly the press conference when he had a pop at the football coming home. That was just delivering this beautiful deadpan way. It was like, well, it's not. It's never been home. I mean, I remember in school where we used to... We were in the tech in Mount Bellew, and we gave our teachers We gave them a tough time, in fairness. Now, maybe they'll reflect on it as kind of a bit of
learning experience.
Hindsight. Certainly, there was a laser at the board, and teacher, of course, would turn around, and the laser would be gone. Teacher would turn back to the board, and the laser would reappear. But, you know, to do that to a goalkeeper in that situation, it's pretty sad, to be fair. He's a brilliant goalkeeper, I have to say. He's, you know, is he not entitled to be at one of the best clubs in the world?
Well, he's won the Premier League, hasn't he? But it'll be interesting to see, does somebody come in from... I watched Leicester. I was commentating on Leicester in the Europa League last year. And it was a game, obviously, behind closed doors. And you could hear everything that happened during the game. And Kasper Schmeichel basically ran the game from being in goal. Now, the language that was going out on air wasn't really for children. If I was in the apologising mode that you sometimes get, I would have been apologising every 5 seconds. But... He ran the game. He refereed the game as well. He never stopped talking and shouting and putting the Leicester players in whatever position they needed to be in, telling Jamie Vardy where to go when the centre halves would have it. And any little decision that went their way, he was up to the referee. And the referee was quite inexperienced. I think it was first round Europa League. And you could tell the referee was pretty frightened when Kasper Schmeichel was in his face. So he clearly has that leadership quality as well.
I was talking to Will about this last night. This tournament for people of my age, sort of our age, shall we say, Nathan, is that fair enough?
Let's all in together. Well, we both got the vaccine this week. It's a strange experience, isn't it, going to the vaccine and suddenly you're in a room and everybody is the exact same age. Everybody who was there, there was hundreds of people there, and I'm looking around going, so we're all around 39. Am I older looking or younger looking than these people?
This was a double-edged sword in that, like, wow, I look relatively young compared to these people, but maybe they don't think that, so I must look the same as these people, a lot of whom looked about 50, I thought. So I was like, well, but anyway, the point I was trying to make was that we have a lot of nostalgia in this tournament, but, you know, you look at Viale, Enrique, Mancini from just the other semi-final, but Kasper Schmeichel the first save from... the Sterling shot at 1-0 was just so much exactly like what his dad would do. And then he also spoke about, like, that's been one of the highlights, and there haven't been many of going to games behind closed doors. Like, I was in Tala last year and I could hear Zlatan Ibrahimovic's voice in the middle of a game. It's quite cool. But you do hear, apparently, when Ireland played in the Aviva Stadium and Bazuna was in goal, you could hear him. He was really impressive. But Schmeichel is exactly like his dad again in that respect. And it's so important as a goalkeeper. You get, you know, I've been watching Dundalk tonight, and Beebe, who's been their keeper, I'd highly doubt he's the sort of keeper. The confidence has been very low this season. I'd highly doubt he's the keeper who shouts at his team. And it's absolutely vital, because it's organisation. Having said that, you have to gain the respect of the other players, because otherwise it's just going to be head wrecking, which Schmeichel has actually so good.
Well, he didn't need to shout at them tonight, did he, Will?
No, Dundalk going nice really segue. Well at the moment, lads. 2-0 up. Dave McMillan, Michael Duffy.
3-0 even, Will.
Well, if it's 3-0, they're in an even better position.
Will Patching has got the third goal.
Aren't going to be a consideration here either if they were to concede one. They're playing Newtown of Wales in Oriel Park. So Patching now putting them 3-0 up. Still about 20 minutes left in that one. Sligo Rovers 0-0 against FH in Iceland. Bohemians are the late kickoff against Stjarnan. That game gets underway at 8:45 Irish time. Iceland an hour behind us, so it's going to be a late finish for the Gypsies players, but they're in decent form going into that. These three games are all in the qualifiers for the Europa Conference League.
We'll be talking Wimbledon after 8:00, but we now know the makeup of the ladies' singles final.
Yeah, we're going to have a first-time women's champion, no matter what happens on Saturday afternoon. The world number one, Ashley Barty, says she's completed a dream by getting to the final at SW19. Earlier today, she beat the 2018 winner Angelique Kerber in straight sets to reach her debut decider in London. She'll face Karolina Pliskova, who came from a set down to win in three against the second seed Arnia Sabalenka. That was a really, really good match. And Pliskova might even be the mild favourite, given her experience on grass going into Saturday.
And time for a couple more quick stories.
Yeah, well, the Olympics is going to be behind closed doors. Organisers of the Tokyo 2020 Games confirming that today. A state of COVID emergency is running through the Japanese capital, with the Olympics now just 2 weeks away. The president of the Games, Seiko Hashimoto, said this evening, "It's regrettable that spectators will be unable to attend." I know Johnny was watching this afternoon. The Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board today faced calls for it to be disbanded at an Oireachtas Agriculture Committee hearing. The hearing was investigating claims made by trainer Jim Bulger a few weeks ago that there's doping issues in Irish racing and that it faces potentially a Lance Armstrong moment. Bulger himself declined an invitation to appear at the meeting on legal advice because he wouldn't have had parliamentary privilege. Independent TD Michael Collins called for the IHRB to be dismantled and replaced by a new independent body to police the sport. Horse Racing Ireland Chief Executive Brian Kavanagh, for his part, said all winners in Ireland are currently being tested, and he says there's been an increase in out-of-competition testing as well.
You were watching this, Johnny. What did you make
of it? Yeah, just that particular line, I think the race boss said it briefly, the Collins thing, that's just such an outlier in terms of what happened. In fairness to the IHRB and HRI, it did very well. And these Oireachtas committee meetings are so bizarre. I mean, it was done on Zoom and there were technical issues. You had Michael Ring, like, really annoyed with Senator Ronan Mullen, who many people may have heard of, my neck of the woods. I think we leave it at that. But Michael Ring was waiting, like, he had his hand up, like the Zoom hand. I mean, if he had an actual hand up, it was up for about an hour and a half, and he got completely annoyed that Senator Mullen shouldn't have had the seniority, and he got a question in ahead of him. And it was 2 hours of very little happening. But to be fair, the IHRB actually did very well, and that Collins suggestion that it should be disbanded was, in the overall scheme of things, really was neither here nor there. I think if you believe some of the stuff that Paul Kimmage wrote on Sunday, none of it was substantiated. Literally none of it whatsoever was substantiated today.
Yeah, they are a couple of fascinating articles with Jim Bulger over the last few weeks from Paul Kimmage. It's good to see that they've moved on and that these things are far more organised, these Oireachtas committees, now ever since that day with the FAI. No.
Well, I mean, I'll never forget that. But in terms of the structure, I mean, it's so flawed, because like one particular politician, he could talk for 10 minutes. And that's like, we only have 2 hours here and we have so much to get through. And they are a bit farcical, but kind of strangely entertaining in a kind of a bleeding my life away type way.
What a way to spend a Thursday afternoon. Johnny, great stuff as always.
Thanks, Nathan. Good to see you.
Will, thank you as well. So otbsports.com if you want to get any of the rest of the day's sports news. So coming up on the football show, we've David Myler and James Richardson looking ahead to the Euro 2020 final. John Giles coming up in just a moment, and then after 8, Brian O'Driscoll. It's almost 7:30. John Giles waiting.
The news round on Off the Ball
with Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.